Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
If you think kids are playing too many video games, well, so does the Chinese government. It's limited online gaming to 3 hours per week for anyone under 18. And now Beijing is also slowing approvals for online games to fight what it considers addiction. It's all part of a broader strategy by the Communist Party to manage family life and the tech industry. For more, we have NPR's Emily Feng in Shanghai. And Emily, give us a picture of gaming in China. I've been there. You live there. It's hard to explain to people far away how pervasive this is.
You probably remember from your time in China that people, even a few years ago, were already addicted to their mobile phones. They're always swiping, prodding, playing mobile games, sometimes even while driving.
Yep.
So it's prevalent in all age groups. But it's also really frustrated parents because they see children who are distracted, who are not going to class and concentrating on their education. And so that's in part what prompted this video game ban.
Yeah, and can you tell us a little bit more about what seems to be Beijing's motivation here as far as this broader social goal? I mean, I've heard, you know, in my time there and your time there, there's often talk about spiritual pollution and that kind of propaganda. But what's your sense of the real social goal here?
Part of it is curbing this real problem. We have this in the U.S. where people are addicted to social media and the internet. It's the same in China. Only in China, they've taken much more draconian measures. There were already limits on what kind of games people of a certain age could play. Now they're taking that to more of an extreme by asking people to register for all mobile games and gaming parlors with their identification. And if you're under the age of 18, as you mentioned, you can only play between the times of 8 p.m. and 9 p.m., 1 hour a day, and you can play for one extra hour on holidays. Mm. So Beijing has not only redirected the attention of their future workers, their future citizens, but they also have kind of kneecapped some of the very, very powerful tech firms that had been accruing a lot of money through selling these sometimes violent, sometimes slightly lewd games to teenagers.
All right. And this rule comes amid other big moves. The government has also gone after private tutoring companies trying to narrow their space in the economy, another gigantic industry in China where most Chinese parents either pay for tutoring for their child or want to. So when you kind of put these together, what's the broader idea here of what the central government is seeking?
It's regulating culture, as you know, mushy and conceptual as culture can be. So in addition to video games, private education has undergone some major reforms. Private education was hyper-competitive because Chinese parents really value education. So they were willing to pay a lot of extra money for after-school tutoring and after-school classes. But that exacerbated social inequality because it was only families who could pay who got the best education. So this summer, China's education ministry started limiting that kind of private tutoring. They made all private education companies nonprofits in just one sweep. And they're strictly enforcing these bans on after-school classes. They're going so far as to arrest and fine people who are secretly hiring tutors. Again, just like video game ban, it hurts a lot of people because it puts them out of work. But parents, for the most part, support these rules because they're also exhausted trying to get their kids not to play video games, and they're tired of how competitive and expensive education had become. But wealthier parents who benefited from the system, who were willing to shell out for a $300 an hour tutor after school, they are now scrambling to find ways to cover their tracks, to continue that kind of elite access to the best teachers, and they will find ways if they have the resources. So in the end, people who are wealthy will still continue to pull ahead, but the party's idea is that that inequality at least won't be as extreme as it was before.
Emily, this is being billed under the umbrella of common prosperity. What does that actually mean?
It's a good question because it's not entirely clear. On the surface, it appears that the Communist Party is trying to return to its original socialist mission of providing a good standard of living and equal access to all of its citizens. Unfortunately, China these days has become a highly unequal place. And so there's an idea that all of these particularly private companies got really rich in China's opening and reform, that these private firms owe much of their success to the Chinese Communist Party. And so now it's time for these companies to give back to society. and to help China become a more equal, wealthy place. A number of companies have seemingly volunteered to give huge donations to charity, companies like Tencent, Alibaba, Pinduoduo, this e-commerce company. But we're not sure how that money is going to be used. Zhejiang Province, historically one of China's wealthiest, has set up what it calls a common prosperity model zone that, from the brief government descriptions, makes it sound like it'll be some kind of pilot for socialist paradise. So what I'm looking for is some more details about what policies will be in place to define what common prosperity means. Does it mean more government regulation so that companies can't run away with profits? Does it mean much more government surveillance over day-to-day life? Or it doesn't mean vast redistribution, perhaps even income or property tax, which is something that's long been debated but never implemented in China.
That is NPR's Beijing correspondent Emily Feng. In this case, joining us from Shanghai. Emily, thanks as always.
Thanks, Scott.